Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So the highfalutin executive who publishes fiction magazines decides that Ray Palmer's going a little bit too far with the shaver mystery?
I think so. I think there was a Life article in the height of the shaver days, which was very critical. I think people were saying that there was dangerous things happening within the pages of some of these. You have to remember, too, that Dianetics was run in Astounding, the original article by L. Ron Hubbard. And so there was this weird blend of strange things happening in science fiction magazines at the time where somehow what was originally just fictional was extending out into presenting a different version of reality. And I think for Mr. Ziff, I believe that, yes, I think the highfalutin exec, you're absolutely right. He didn't want to be going to cocktail parties with people who'd read Life magazine, and he was responsible for publishing something that people were saying was crazy and dangerous. So absolutely, Gene, that's pretty much what happened.
As we say on the Paracast, I'm crazy, Tim's dangerous.
No, I'm crazy dangerous.
Well, then I'm dangerous crazy. Or I am dangerously crazy.
There you go.
Well, I think Richard Shaver was considered both dangerous and crazy. If you wanted me to tell you some things I've discovered about Shaver since I've been poking around Amherst, I'm happy to as well.
Please.
So, again, there wasn't a whole lot, I don't think, of on-the-boots research about what was happening in Amherst and Lanark. It's essentially the same area. In that period from 1949 to 1963. We know there was a scandal that drove Richard Shaver out of town. We know that. We didn't really know what the people of Amherst and Lanark thought of Richard Shaver. Now, as I've said, what I can tell is Ray Palmer was thought very highly of in the community. He went to church. He was, I think, a member of local kind of, you know, Lions clubs and local councils and the school board and that kind of thing. He had a company which employed local housewives and other people who wanted, you know, an income to work, you know. When I say housewives, it's because people have actually used that term when I was talking to them during the day, and they could go and pick up their kids, and Ray was very understanding. And yet, this is what I've heard anyway, yada, yada, yada. So he was well-liked. Well, what I noticed when I was talking to some people on the ground is very few people seem to remember Shaver initially. And I'm like, can you remember Ray Palmer being with him? Again, they moved there together. So, and presumably they're friends. Presumably they're, we know that they spent holidays together, and we know that they regularly had dinners together. We know that Ray B. Palmer was going rock hunting along with one of Ray A. Palmer's daughters with Richard Shaver. So they were clearly close, but people in town didn't have many recollections, at least that I've found so far. I'm still interviewing, so who knows, of Richard Shaver in town. A couple of the older guys who both left, and I was fortunate enough to get their addresses. I think one's in California and one's in Arizona now. Anyway, both of them have told me very similar stories. And that is that while Ray Palmer became almost, you know, a part of the Amherst community, he was a part of the Amherst community, that Richard Shaver was always on the outer. One of these men told me Richard Shaver didn't, he said, it sounds horrible. He said he looked like a bum or he looked like he was a drunk. Presumably back in the 50s in Amherst, people still dressed well when they went to town. Both of these men said they couldn't remember seeing Palmer and Shaver together ever. They both remembered, and can you imagine this? For those of you who haven't seen Rock Art by Richard Shaver, an awful lot of it is gory, kind of gruesome scenes. A lot of it is nudity. A lot of it is things that mightn't be considered, you know, PG. It might be beyond PG, certainly at least PG. But he started to have, at the Portage County Fair, a stand where this is like a county fair in rural Wisconsin in the late 1950s and early 1960s, where he would display his rock books. Both of these men, independently from each other, told me that they remember being fascinated by it, and their mothers, again, independent stories, dragging them away from the rock book stand. One of these men told me that behind, I suppose, Richard Shaver's back, which is a horrible story, people called Richard Shaver Rock Knutson in Lanark and in Amherst because they thought he was crazy. One of these men told me that his father, who was also, probably, he probably knew Ray Palmer and knew him well because both of them went to the same church apparently. But when he, Richard Shaver's house was supposedly not in great shape, which I've heard from a few people, even when he bought it, Richard Shaver, who was quite handy, still wanted somebody to help him fix the foundations. And he wanted to hire this man's father to go and fix his foundations. And the man said when he went there to Shaver's house, there was art on the wall of family inappropriate type art. I won't go into the details. And he never returned. And so as that man told me, Richard Shaver, which is a terribly sad story, was shunned. As the man also said, I think they were too bohemian for, he described Amherst and Lanark as being like a Mayberry back in the 1950s and early 60s.
Wasn't there a time here, and this must have been around this time, because Palmer knew very well the early editors of what became girly magazines, like Hugh Hefner and everything else, back in Chicago. Wasn't there some involvement of that particular area that affected Shaver?
It's the great tragedy, I think, of Shaver's later life, as well as perhaps the Shaver-Palmer relationship. William Hamling was an associate editor at Amazing Stories. He was arguably Ray Palmer's best friend. Maybe Shaver was, who knows. They were all very close anyway. William Hamling used to visit Palmer and Amherst, I believe, from, again, the Richard Toronto books, and try to talk Ray Palmer out of moving back to the cities. Like, this is no place for somebody as talented as you to have situated yourself. But Palmer was very happy there, so he didn't move. But William Hamling was on the ground floor, apparently, of Playboy. And he didn't follow through with being a part of it. And when Hefner had the incredible success of Playboy, Hamling launched his own magazine, which I believe was called Rogue. At this same time, Pulp Fiction is falling apart. As you know now, you go to the newsstands, there might still be an analog, I don't even know if there is anymore, but Pulp Fiction's all but gone. And so all of these writers needed somewhere to go, and a lot of them went to adult fiction. William Hamling started a paperback publishing company, which ran, I suppose, you know, I don't know, lurid-ish soft porn kind of stuff. And he ran it out of, he needed somewhere to run it out of. And he decided, you know, we'll run it out of Wisconsin. And he knew both Shaver and he knew Palmer. And there's different versions of what happened. But we know that Shaver signed on as the president of this publishing company. And Shaver had nothing to do with it other than he drew a $200 a month, I believe, check. I think his wife was another one of the executive officers, and I believe Ray Palmer was another one of the executive officers. But Richard Shaver was at the very top of that list. Now, a scandal broke when people discovered that this, in rural Wisconsin, again, in the, this is like Senator Joe McCarthy territory, right? This is like the early 60s, super conservative area, that there was this adult publication company based in rural Wisconsin. Shaver, according to Toronto, drove very quickly to Madison and filed all of the paperwork to, you know, I guess collapse the company or to take his name off the company. But it was too late. Shaver was inundated with journalists who allegedly were literally camping outside of his property. It was such a scandal. And when they interviewed Shaver, and can you imagine how this went, to interview him about his involvement in an adult publishing enterprise, he said, well, I don't know anything about it. I just did it, you know, for the pay, and I just signed my name. But I'll tell you what you guys should really be looking into, if you're all skillful investigators or reporters, are the Darrow underneath the earth who were subverting the surface people. And he showed them their rock books. You can still find the newspaper articles on various sites like newspapers.com or whatever. So can you only imagine? And as a result, Shaver had to flee, supposedly, Amherst.
Hey, we'll have more into the backgrounds of Ray Palmer, Richard Shaver, the invention of the flying saucers. Dean Bertram is with us. Also Tim Swartz. Also Gene Steinberg sometimes. I'm even here. Yes, I am. Although some people might have other ideas, you're in
the podcast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering extras. Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it. We specialize in helping the self-employed and people just like you that need affordable health insurance to get it. We have short and long-term health insurance plans, and some even cover dental, vision, and prescription drugs. Don't take a risk with your family's health insurance. It's not worth it. If you're self-employed or now need affordable health insurance, call right now and learn for free how to get it. Listen, affordable health insurance plans for everyone just like you are a free phone call away. So give us a shout right now.
800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. 800-670-0946. That's 800-670-0946.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Dean Bertram joins us. He's working on a documentary about the man who invented flying saucers, Raymond A. Palmer, talking about some of the sad things that happened to Richard Shaver. When he got his name on, I guess, what some thought of as the wrong kind of publication. By the way, Analog Science Fiction and Fact is still being published. Okay? It's out every other month, 6 issues a year. And ain't cheap, folks. It's $47.97 for a one-year subscription to the print version. But with this kind of magazine, let me tell you, print is what you want. Not digital, print. Let's find out more about what happened to Shaver.
I'm a sucker for print as well. I love print magazines. And I believe you've talked on previous episodes about how those old issues just disintegrate in your hand. Yeah, my Amazing Stories collection, whenever I lift it up, I'm like, oh, no, there goes another piece. They flake everywhere. Sure. But as far as what happened with Shaver, so we know he left. And I guess the popular history, or at least in Richard Toronto's, which is the best history, I think, suggests that I believe that Shaver was just, because he'd been institutionalized before in various hospitals for the, you know, mentally unwell, as well as hospitals for the criminally insane, he was terrified about going back. So he fled to Summit, Arkansas, where he spent the rest of his life. Now, what I don't think anyone had ever heard, and I don't know if anyone else has even talked about it, but I was fortunate enough again to talk to somebody whose father had been at Shaver's, who knew Shaver, who'd seen Shaver's art at the county fair in Portage, Wisconsin, who said, and he said this is speculative, so I'll say this is speculative as well, and I think we'll talk about it in the documentary, in the interview with this man, but it will be hedged there as speculative as well. What he said is he believes the sheriff at the time, he knows a case where there was a very nasty, I know this is a family show, let's just say it was a very nasty case where the sheriff didn't want to have to deal with the crime in his county, so he drove the person out. He essentially gave him 24 hours to leave the town, and my source, my interviewee, knows that that's what happened, and the person fled Portage County to be prosecuted, I assume, elsewhere. Now, the same source says what he suspects happened with Richard Shaver is that Richard Shaver was probably given a visit by the same sheriff who didn't want to deal with those dramas in Portage County, and that is why Richard Shaver fled the state. Incidentally, Richard Shaver later was called in that pornography case, and he did have to, I don't think he ever took the stand, and I believe the case was ultimately tried somewhere like Florida, or I think William Hamling, who died a very rich man in California, but I think Hamling ended up doing a year or two in a very relatively soft prison. But there were criminal ramifications for that, for that publication company. Richard Shaver wasn't prosecuted, but my understanding, at least from talk, I know that he fled. I know he left in a hurry, but from talking to the recent local, who was then a local resident, my impression is that perhaps he was paid a visit by the same sheriff who terrified somebody else out of the county, and that Shaver may have been driven out of Amherst as well, which makes a lot of sense, or Amherst, Lanark area, which makes an awful lot of sense, given that he seemed to be very committed to the space he was living in. And when he left, he lamented, and I can tell you another story about this in a minute, but he lamented that he had left behind millions of dollars worth of rock books because he had to leave in such a hurry.
How would he rate them as being millions and millions of dollars worth of books?
That's a very good question. I'm sure they were only worth a few hundred bucks, if that. But I assume he had a collection of rock books. The reason I know that he did is I spoke earlier about visiting the property where Richard Shaver used to live and where I thought I was going to be able to film. And the owner was very nice and told me all kinds of stories. His family had owned the property for over 40 years. I assume his parents, because he's certainly not old enough to have owned a property for more than 40 years himself. He's probably only in his 50s or something. But he said there was one other owner between the Shavers and his family, and they were only held the land for, you know, a limited amount of time. He remembered the route, because his family were always in the area, that he remembered all the stories that Shavers was strange. And apparently, again, this is what I keep hearing from the people who remember. He kind of had this stigma attached to him. And when they tore down the house, which he showed me where it stood on the property, which now ironically has a Catholic shrine, literally, I'm not kidding you, which is quite common in the Midwest, in this part of the world, because there's a lot of Catholic and Lutheran people here who are quite religious. There was a Catholic shrine on where, literally where the house had stood. I don't think they put it there because of to, you know, to exercise the land or something. I just think it was a prime spot of real estate. So they put a rather large Catholic shrine with some statues on there where Shaver's house used to stand. And he told me that when they demolished the house, yes, there were rock books in the house. And the reason I'm sure he was being sincere is, A, how would the devil, would he know what a rock book was? But the way he described them is what I've heard. He said that they were varnished, they were cut very thin, and they had all kinds of strange images painted on them. And he actually was even, as obviously somebody's a handyman himself, like was querying it, like, I wonder what saw he used to cut the rock that fine. And I was obviously excited. I'm like, what happened to those rock books? I want to see these rock books. And he was like, well, some other neighbors came who knew when we were pulling it down, and they took some of the rock books, and I don't know, well, and I get the impression that the rest of the rock books were just discarded. Again, I don't think they would have been worth millions of dollars, certainly not then, but there was probably a considerable collection of rock books in Shaver's house when he grabbed his materials and fled literally in the middle of the night.
You know, it's very interesting here that at one time I had lots and lots of material from Shaver. And as I said, you know, I moved around the country, and that's one reason. I stored everything in a file cabinet in a business I'd set up with a guy named Fred. And so the business didn't do so well, so I sold my interest. And Fred finally folded. Fred folded. That's kind of goes together. And he threw out my file cabinet with hundreds of Shaver letters, rock books, mementos from the UFO field, somewhere in a trash heap or something, or a recycling plant. Oh, God. That's the story.
What a tragedy.
Well, you know, the late Tim Beckley, he always used to tell me that when he was a teenager and corresponded with Shaver, that Shaver was constantly sending him boxes of, as Tim Beckley's mother would say, dirty rocks that his mom made him toss out into the backyard because she wouldn't have these dirty rocks in her house. So somewhere, maybe still in New Brunswick, New Jersey, you know, buried in a garden somewhere, there's Shaver's rock books.
I need to get a shovel and go there and start digging.
But that just, you know, it just goes to show you, though, because I know that, and it's been a few years ago, there was actually like an outsider artist show with Shaver's work being featured that actually went around to a number of different venues.
Richard S. Shaver, Raymond A. Palmer, Dean Bertram, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz. What can I say? You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
News update. Breaking this Sunday morning, a mass shooting in Maryland, at least two people killed, dozens injured in South Baltimore. Witnesses saying that hundreds of people were gathered for an event. Some say they heard 20 to 30 shots fired. In other news, a record number of Americans on the move this 4th of July weekend, and this Sunday still delays at the nation's airports and plenty of traffic to contend with on the highways. The silver lining in all this, your barbecue Tuesday will be cheaper than last year.
According to the American Farm Bureau Metro families can expect to pay less than $68 for a party of 10. That's down 3% from last year's record high of $69.68. I'm Chris Caraggio.
We turn now to politics in the 2024 campaign and former President Trump holding a rally Saturday in Pickens, South Carolina. Some supporters say they'd love to see him pick Florida Governor Republican Ron DeSantis as his running mate. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422. Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the mineral doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
By the way, Dean's going to be a part of our After the Paracast premium podcast. For subscribers to the Paracast Plus, go to theparacast.plus for more info. Speaking of availability of the show, we understand that one of the popular podcast apps, Stitcher, is going under, and so we've moved on to Pandora. So if you have Pandora access, and that's included also with a SiriusXM satellite radio subscription, you'll find the Paracast there. We're talking here about Richard Shaver, about his departure from Amherst, Wisconsin. And by the way, I did visit Shaver, as I explained earlier, in his home in Summit, Arkansas. And it was actually another small town, you know, like Amherst. And his little cottage was very neat. I got the impression from what you said that his home in Amherst was a mess.
Well, I'm not sure if the internals were a mess, but I certainly know it wasn't in a great state of repair externally. Like, I know when he bought it, it was already standing. Like, he didn't build the house. I've seen plat maps from a number of years before when his farmhouse was still standing. And I imagine that it had been built sometime before that. So I've heard from a number of people now that the house itself, as far as the physicality of the house, structurally it wasn't fantastic. At an internal level, all I know is that some of the imagery inside was not appropriate for conservative eyes in the 1950s.
So what ended up happening to Ray Palmer? I mean, you know, we've talked about his life, all of his great achievements. So what's the final story?
I think this final story of Ray Palmer's life is a happy ending, to be honest. I think that Ray Palmer relocated to Amherst, Wisconsin with a wife he loved, with three children that he adored, that he was part of the community, that he ran a publishing company that was able to keep his head above water, as well as allow him to still publish things like Flying Saucers from Other Worlds and Search Magazine and The Hidden World, that wonderful, I think, 16-issue series of the reboot of the Shaver mystery in the 60s. And he was able to publish various books about flying saucers, as well as publish things for local people. A local paper he started, you know, to publish things that local businesses and local churches needed. And he lived out his life in a beautiful part of the world, raised a family, I think, which seemed to be very happy and very functional. And then, unfortunately, I think his physical ailments, which date back to the accident, caught up with him probably prematurely in 1977. I believe he and Marjorie were away visiting one of the daughters when he got, he started feeling weak and not feeling well, and he was hospitalized and he didn't make it. But to minus that premature death, I think the 20 plus years, almost 28, 27 years that he spent in Amherst were happy. And that makes me happy, because often there's tragic endings to stories of the weird and the unusual. But I think Palmer's ending is a pretty nice ending. I think it's a nice, I think he ended his life in a nice way.
Why do you think that, considering the contributions that Ray Palmer had for not only the field of science fiction, but UFOs and the paranormal, I mean, he really was a mover and shaker that a lot of people don't remember who he was?
That's one of the questions which has driven me making this documentary. And it's interesting. I run a film festival in Eau Claire, which is about an hour and a half from where I live, called Midwest Weird Fest. It's a fairly popular festival. It runs sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and paranormal documentaries. And when I was talking about Ray Palmer in an introduction to a screening this year, I asked the audience, and they're all fairly canny, you know, like they're people who are used to this kind of content. Who here knows who Ray Palmer is? Not a single hand went up. I asked for a show of hands. And these are people who live in Wisconsin. These are people who live an hour and a half away from where Ray Palmer spent over a quarter of a century of his life. So he has in many ways been forgotten. And I suspect that's because there's a UFO belief, as Gene was suggesting, I think earlier, is somehow ahistorical. Like, we keep making the same mistakes and the same decisions and expectations again and again. The way Kehoe was imagining disclosure was about to happen in the 50s, they're still talking about disclosure today. But I think with Palmer, similar to the way he's been mishandled or mistreated in the science fiction world, there's something about mainstream ufology that wants it all to be very cut and dry. The government knows everything. It's nuts and bolts sources from another world. This, we already know what it all is. We just want the government to tell us what it is. Ray Palmer never played that game. Now, Ray Palmer wrote about the stymie factor, the idea, and he spoke about it at one of his last speaking engagements, about how UFOs are kind of, you know, not respected and people are kind of humiliated, and all of that's true. But he was always happy to play with different ideas, from the Wapsie Bible to Shaver's Inner Earth, you know, cavern people, to just genuine to ideas about the inner earth. He would bounce around all kind of ideas, and I think there's this, and I think it's incorrect. I think there's this idea that Ray Palmer was kind of Barnum-esque, and in a way he was. He knew how to sell a story. But I think there was a sincerity to Ray Palmer and an open-mindedness to Ray Palmer, and certainly that open-mindedness almost does not exist in mainstream ufology today, or even back for a lot of the time Palmer was still writing.
One thing Palmer said that I quote very, very often, "Flying saucers are here to make us think."
You know, it's funny you say that, Gene, because Raymond B. Palmer told me something very similar. It's something that he still obviously subscribes to, and he said it was what his dad thought. He said, this makes people want to, you know, look into the mystery more, as you said, want to think more. And I think that's the real value. I think flying saucers are ultimately have much to do with human psychology, and I don't mean that in a dismissive way, that it's all in our minds or something, but I think that our approach to it is very indicative to us at a personal psychological level, as well as a cultural psychological level. Like, if you trace the development of UFO belief, you can't help but escape the interconnectedness that it has with the culture of the day. It both affects the culture and the culture affects it. And I think if there's somebody who is making suggestions that goes against the grain of what the culture is, or what the, whether that's the inner culture of ufology or the exterior culture of, oh, the government must know everything and it's some great big X-Files type of conspiracy, I don't think anybody wants to hear other explanations.
Well, certainly right now, it seems like for a lot of researchers, and especially it seems like, you know, the people who are just coming on board with the government and the military about UFOs, seem to have like this collective amnesia about the past, or possibly even an unwillingness to look at it. You know, it seems like that in their mindset, this all started in 2004, and anything that happened before that is negligible.
That's absolutely true. I mean, look at the way that the UFO phenomenon has been handled since the New York Times story broke in 2017 on the front page. And all of a sudden, everybody from CNN to Tucker Carlson is treating this as a respectable story now, because apparently the gatekeepers of respectability of the New York Times have said it's respectable. And then you get both congressional hearings, you get Department of Defense briefings. All of a sudden, it's like all of the history between the revelations now that it's respectable, going back to 1969, the Condon Committee, everything that happened in between that, where the Condon Committee said there's nothing for the U.S. government to look at to today, none of that ever happened.
It's like they don't learn the lessons of history. They get rid of history. There is no history. There is only what happens now. I want to ask you more about that, but first, let's look more at the forthcoming Ray Palmer biography about the man who invented flying saucers. With Gene and Dean and Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperTea.com.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did.
clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
It's all too obvious. We're being distracted by meaningless news headlines. When you dig to find the truth, you discover that the American way of life is being threatened by the institutions we used to trust. It's easy to see the future holds more food shortages, systematic controls, and government overreach. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are preparing. They're taking steps to be self-reliant and investing in emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy to get started and join the ranks with this limited-time offer. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get their top-selling 4-week emergency food kit. Enjoy tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get new lower pricing this week on these 4-week emergency food kits. Secure at least one food kit for each member of your family. They ship free, too. Those who know what's coming are preparing. Smart folks, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hi, this is James Fox, director of The Phenomenon and Moment of Contact. You're listening to The Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I think we'll get more into the current stuff also in the After the Paracast podcast with Dean Bertram. Right now, let's go back to Palmer. Where does your documentary stand? When can we see the finished version?
Well, I'd like to finish principal photography, and the plan is to shoot it out by the fall or into the early fall. But then the reality is post-production on any serious, I suppose, feature presentation, whether it's a documentary or a narrative fiction, takes a while. I mean, it takes a while to line it all up. And I don't want to be disingenuous and say this is going to be available in a couple of months. And then the reality might be, is there a festival lineup that I want to hold the premiere status for? But I'll certainly let you guys know as soon as it is available.
So this will be late 2024 if we're still around.
Conceivably. Let's hope we are still around. Yes, I would like to say 2024.
Now, of course, we've seen a few minutes of footage, just works in progress, to get a sense of how it's going. What else do you expect to cover in this film?
Guys, I've been involved in narrative filmmaking before, like feature fictional narrative, filmmaking. And when you do that kind of film, you go in with a very decided upon script, and you can have a shooting schedule, and you know when you're going to at least wrap principal photography. But a documentary is a little different. It's not that you don't kind of already expect where it's going to start and where it's going to end, but when you encounter people and parts of the story along the way, it kind of shifts. Like, for an example, if Raymond B. Palmer becomes a part of the documentary, as I hope he will, because he obviously has more insight into this than anybody else, there will be a considerably different documentary to if he goes, you know what I mean, I'm not interested in doing it. So in a documentary, you often get a change in focus or a change in the direction of the documentary. And it's wonderful because it's surprising. I didn't know many of the things I've discovered since I started poking around at Amherst. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but it goes to show how, documentary filmmaking is far more malleable than a standard narrative fiction film.
Well, certainly events change as we go on. Like, for example, it would be interesting if any conclusions come from the Pentagon study to append that to the film, because you're talking about the guy who started it all, and now you're seeing where it ends up.
You're very right. I'm very conscious of that. I'm conscious of that too many people view this ahistorically. So when they look at the Tic Tac video, or when they listen to a Pentagon press release, or when they read an article in the Debrief or the New York Times, which is all focused upon the government seeming to know all of the answers already, and all we have to do is crack that open, and all of a sudden, ta-da, our beliefs in UFOs from other planets who have long been in cahoots with the U.S. government, and there's underground bases and secret government briefing groups and everything else will all of a sudden be justified. But again, like you said, this is an expectation which went back to Donald Kehoe's writing. So there's an ahistoricity, and I would like to bring that out. You're right, in the documentary, I'd like to bring out the fact that there were people who influenced what we thought about UFOs that are forgotten, and perhaps the chief among those in the early days was Raymond A. Palmer.
I think one of the things about Palmer that really people should take into consideration today is his suggestion that the UFO phenomena was probably not extraterrestrial as we're thinking of extraterrestrial. So he was way ahead of his time with that.
Oh, absolutely. And again, as I mentioned before, this is something that doesn't really penetrate mainstream ufology or mainstream UFO belief. A more recognized level until the new ufology that John Keel wrote about in The Flying Saucer Subculture, which I think he originally wrote in 1973 and then appeared in the Journal of Popular Culture in 1975, where he was like, well, you know, myself and Jacques Vallée and Brad Steiger and other people kind of realized that there was more to it than the nuts and bolts UFO stuff. But yeah, Palmer was saying this super early in the day.
Well, one thing he talked about in the final years of his life is UFOs are from the astral, like another plane of existence, but that's very close to saying multidimensional, multiverse, another dimension, which is very popular, at least in fiction these days.
Yeah, I think it's just a semantic issue, really. I do think that there's commonalities between traditional mystic or occult or, you know, theosophical, depending on what hat you're wearing, approaches to the paranormal, which coincides with what kind of uses a more modern quantum physics kind of way to explain that we're talking about something which is somehow apart from this reality, but somehow sometimes drifts into this reality or interacts with this reality. But yeah, I agree. It's the same thing.
So what Palmer was saying there is that when Richard Schaefer said he went to the caverns beneath the earth, he wasn't physically in caverns, he was in the astral plane or another dimension. Or maybe he got there mentally, kind of like John Carter did. If you remember, John Carter goes to sleep in this cave and he ends up on Mars.
Well, that was the great point of disagreement between Raymond A. Palmer and Richard Sharp Shaver. The great point of disagreement was that Shaver thought this was all physical, materialistic, and it could all be, if we could just put our heads under the earth and dig down there and pay real attention, there's physical proof for it. Well, Ray Palmer's position was much like the Uapse Bible that he published and popularized again to some degree, was that there are these spiritual realms which interact with us. And when Richard Shaver was laying in a hospital bed in, you know, Ionia or Yiplitsi or the various places that he went to, he was having a genuine experience, but that experience was on a different plane and wasn't in a physical, literal cavern world.
And of course, Shaver would really object to anything that wasn't completely physical. But yes, that's taking the mystical and changing it to sci-fi, which becomes another dimension. And it's just amazing how much that's covered now. Like, for example, the current TV show Superman and Lois has done some multidimensional things. The latest movie, The Flash, the film where he goes back in time to save his mother from being murdered and ends up with two Barry Allens and then two versions of Batman, including the guy who says, "I'm Batman," Michael Keaton, the best Batman of all. But all this is the multiverse. And it's just been very popular on TV. And there was a version of Flash Gordon on the Sci-Fi Network where when he went to Mongo, he didn't take a spaceship and go to Mongo. He went through a dimensional portal. Fascinating.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and again, much of this you can see laid out in advance by Ray Palmer's musings on flying saucers going back to even the Shaver Mystery days. So there's nothing new under the sun. And, of course, even before Palmer, a lot of this is evident in the type of thinkings of various religions and various theosophical and various occult thinkers and organizations and groups, that somehow this reality that we live in isn't the only reality and we are interacting with things.
Hey, we're just about out of time for our main show, but Dean will be back for after the Paracast with more discussions. But for those who want to know more about the things you're up to, Dean Bertram, where do they check you out?
Well, at the moment, you can go to theshavermystery.com, which I'd love you to do. That just directs you to the Facebook page of the man who invented flying saucers, because I update it fairly regularly with what I'm finding and what I'm discovering, and there will be an official man who invented flying saucer webpage close to the day. They can also check me out every week on both Saturday night at 10 p.m. Central and 9 p.m. on Tuesday night Central on Untold Radio Network for Talking Weird and Mysterious Library, which are my regular shows. And you're a big influence, by the way, Gene. I've been listening to your show for years, and you really are the gold standard, so thank you.
You can find us on Twitter if you look for the PowerCast. If we do anything to raise the ire of Elon Musk, of course, we may not last there very long. We're on Facebook with two areas, but we're shadow banned by Facebook, so the PowerCast.com is not allowed. Boy, we're having a lot of fun with this. You can also check out the PowerCast.shop and buy branded merchandise for the show. Get your best merch from the PowerCast.shop. Also check out the PowerCast Plus at the PowerCast.plus. Simple sign-up instructions. It's a streaming service that we will give you this show without the network ads, higher quality audio, and the exclusive After the PowerCast podcast, where you never know what's going to happen next, and the FCC doesn't monitor that show. After the PowerCast, we also offer a special deal. Use the coupon code UFO20, UFO20, you get 20% off for a 5-year subscription and a lifetime subscription of the PowerCast.plus. Dean Bertram, thanks for joining us on the PowerCast.
Thank you so much for having me, Gene and Tim.
The PowerCast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the PowerCast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident, or injured at work, you have rights, and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good, they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.